Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, July 11th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway star's James Marino.
James, as I just said, today is July 11th, also known as 7-11. So I feel that it's my civic duty to let listeners know that if you go to any 7-11 convenience store around the country today, you'll be able to pick up a free Slurpee from 11 a.m. through 7 p.m. And James, while that is good news, the best news is that they apparently have a birthday cake flavored Slurpee to celebrate as well. So if anyone is looking for me today, you can probably find me at a 7-Eleven.
Hey, aside from that being totally awesome that I'm going to drink like 40 Slurpees tomorrow, we missed your birthday a few weeks ago, so happy birthday, Matt.
Yeah, I don't really talk about that. Whatever. Thanks.
I don't know. I meant to bring it up, and I left notes for myself, and I tied ribbons around my hair and things like that, and I totally zoned on it until just now when you said birthday cake. So
it was on a Sunday, so you know we didn't really have a
tell
show
me on a Sunday.
I'll tell you on a Sunday next time. All right.
All right, let's get on to the news. Hamilton learns how to say goodbye.
James, I have a feeling that everyone listening to this podcast already knows everything about this story, but it was definitely the biggest piece of theatrical news over the weekend. So we are leading off with Lin-Manuel Miranda, Leslie Odom Jr., Philippa Sue, and The Bullet, Ariana DeBose, saying goodbye to Hamilton on Saturday. As we've talked about before, Javier Munoz, Brandon Victor Dixon, and Lexi Lawson will take over those three vacated principal tracks today. But before that could happen, they took to the stage one last time, and the final curtain call was streamed on Facebook Live. We'll have a link in the show notes if you feel the need to watch it for the 174th time since Saturday night. During that final curtain call, when Lin was taking his final bow, music director Alex Lacamoire queued up the orchestra to play the iconic W.G. Snuffy Walden opening theme to The West Wing, which seemed to move Lin quite a bit. And in a move that I have a feeling pleased his wife Vanessa quite a bit, Lin wasted no time cutting his Hamill hair off after his last performance. James, I'm sure that we will continue to get a steady stream of Hamilton-related news over the next few months as more original cast members are replaced and we get closer to the PBS documentary and the release of the Hamilton mixtape. But now that the show has been on Broadway for a year, it's won a bunch of Tonys, Lin is no longer leading the show, do you think that we will slowly get back to a more traditional, evenly distributed Broadway news cycle anytime soon?
I think that as people get back to work after Labor Day, yes. I think that the press reps will start hitting us with Evan Hansen and other news that is coming our direction. And I think that we will slowly back off of the Hamilton stuff. But over the summer where there's not a lot happening, I think that we're going to continue to get Hamilton news. And we talked about on yesterday's This Week on Broadway with Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia that some rumor was that Lin-Manuel's hair was going to go to the Smithsonian.
And oh, my
other,
God.
Other rumors were that it was going to be auctioned off for a charity. So we'll have to see what happens. But I want to say that I got my hair cut in the morning before Lin-Manuel got his hair cut.
I'm sure that's exactly why he did it, but considering I haven't had a haircut in really over 10 years, I'm not really too worried about haircuts, and you talking about it just kind of hurts my feelings, so thanks, James.
Hippie, get off my lawn.
No, that's not why. That's not why I haven't had a haircut, James.
Yeah, man, you got threads.
No, I got nothing.
All right, next up, Off Center's Runaways reviews. So this was a very popular Off Center show. Are we going to see it? What are the reviews like?
Well, because of the kind of unusual nature of the encore schedule and things kind of getting haywire, we didn't talk about this last week, but Elizabeth Swatos' Runaways did have a very successful off-center run at New York City Center last week. When the show originally played the Public Theater in 1977, it was shaped around interviews from actual real child runaways. In this production, the cast is made up of an incredibly diverse group of young actors, most of whom were cast through an open call. It was directed by Sam Pinkleton and choreographed by Ani Taj. And the show did receive mostly positive reviews. We'll see what happens with that here in a minute. I'll ask you about it. But the New York Times' Ben Brantley wrote the strongest of the raves, saying they're tearing up the air at New York City Center, where a pulsing reincarnation of Elizabeth Swados' Runaways is testifying to the atomic power of adolescent angst. This blast of undiluted teen spirit is guaranteed to leave you feeling windblown, hyped up, and ready to race through the most torpid summer night. The biggest discrepancy amongst the critics seems to be the level of authenticity that the production had in regards to the Runaways' roughness. Frank Sheck of The Hollywood Reporter wrote, "It's not surprising that there's a discernible lack of grittiness. While this current incarnation boasts about being cast largely with students from throughout the five boroughs, its populous ensemble includes recent veterans of such Broadway shows as Matilda, School of Rock, Finding Neverland, Mary Poppins, and The King and I. The only thing these preternaturally talented young performers appear to be running away from is the stampede of agents eager to sign them." However, friend of the show Matt Windman of AM New York wrote, "The large multi-ethnic cast, comprised mainly of local high school students, is appropriately young and raw, giving an air of powerful authenticity to the material. It would be a shame for this production to slip away after its short run ends on Saturday. Might the public theater consider giving Runaways a home again?" James, you mentioned this. It's been very well received, and the buzz has been very good, and I think that's only increased since Matt Windman wrote his review. There's a lot of rumors swirling. So do you think we're going to get a second life of this Runaways?
It seems with such strong reviews, especially the rave from Brantley, that something will happen. But I also think that we probably won't hear anything about it until after Labor Day when everybody gets back from the Hamptons.
That's fair. You know, and it's not like it would be unheard of for an off-center show to make a transition somewhere else. I mean, just a couple seasons ago, Violet made the jump from off-center to Broadway. Now, I don't know if Runaways would do that or if it would find an off-Broadway subscription house to host it. But I think anytime you can see, a show that doesn't get done very often, done by a great cast in New York City, that's thumbs up.
Yeah, I guess the key for this would be to figure out what the best type of a Broadway house it would fit into, which I haven't done the research on it, so I couldn't really think off the top. I couldn't spitball off the top of my head what that would be. So figure out which Broadway houses it's most appropriate for, then to figure out are those shows that are currently in there heading out in any time in the future. And that will probably be the equation that most people do, unless it transfers to a major off-Broadway, like a Roundabout or Second Stage or MTC's type of thing.
Yeah.
Or public.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the public is really heavily booked. I know, if they were to pick it up, they'd have to put it into
next season
or a non-public space that they rented.
Yeah.
All right. Next up in the calendar, what do we have?
Well, we have a number of high-profile shows opening or beginning performances this week. First is Oslo at Lincoln Center Theater, which officially opens tonight. The play by J.T. Rogers is directed by Bartlett Schur and centers on the 1993 peace talks between Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat. In press notes, the show is described as a darkly funny and sweeping new work. Oslo is about a group of Israeli, Palestinian, Norwegian, and American men and women struggling to overcome their fears, mistrust, and hatred of each other. The cast includes Anthony Azizi, Tony Award winners Jennifer Ely and Jefferson Mays, and more. The show is currently scheduled to run through August 28th. So if this sounds good to you, get out there. I will warn you that it does run about 3 hours and has two intermissions, so keep that in mind when you're picking which nights you want to go see it. Then on Tuesday, tomorrow night, the Motown National Tour sets up shop on Broadway. The extended stop will play 18 weeks on Broadway through November 13th. The show's official opening is scheduled for July 21st. James, this is a show that you and I have been talking about for almost a year and a half since the tour came here to Orlando, just, I think, 2 months after the Broadway production kind of surprisingly closed, even though it was still doing pretty good business. The producers initially said that they were going to try and find ways to cut costs when it eventually returned to Broadway. Have you heard about anything about those efforts? About, will it just be the fact that the tour had a slightly smaller cast and a smaller orchestra, or were there other things that you've heard about?
No, I really haven't heard anything about their cost-cutting measures. I'd imagine that when I go to see it in the fall, I'll be able to do a comparison contrast just on the title page alone to see, you know, what the size of the cast is, what the size of the orchestra is. The other types of things are, you know, more or less fixed costs. I mean, they're not saving any money on advertising. They're not saving any money on box office, and they're not saving any money on various fixed costs like that. So, you know, it's got to happen in the variable costs, which is, you know, cast and orchestra and stagehands and things like that.
Yeah, when I saw it here in Orlando in March of 2015, the cast did have, I believe, four or five fewer ensemble members than it did on Broadway. And it was obvious because those cast members, the ensemble members, were running around stage. It was really obvious that they were getting a workout, pretty much running a marathon backstage, trying to put on different costumes and wigs to be different Motown performers.
So you say four or five ensemble members, you're talking about $10,000 in a week in savings. On a multi-million dollar venture, you know, it's kind of, all right, what's up next?
All right, next on our calendar is the off-Broadway return engagement of Bess Wahl's Small Mouth Sounds. This show had its world premiere at Ars Nova last year, where it got great reviews and has returned to New York Signature Theater. Directed by Rachel Chavkin, who will be making her Broadway directorial debut this fall with Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, the show centers on six people who have left the hustle and bustle of city life to go on a silent retreat in the woods. As these strangers confront internal demons, both profound and absurd, their vows of silence collide with the achingly human need to connect. Filled with awkward and insightful humor, this unique and compassionate new play asks how we address life's biggest questions when words fail us. Small Mouth Sounds officially opens on Wednesday and runs through September 25th at the Pershing Square Signature Center.
Let me jump in here for a second.
Go for it.
I didn't realize that Small Mouth Sounds was directed by Rachel Chavkin. Rachel is just, she is the person to watch. She's an amazing, amazing director. And now, as soon as we get off this recording, I have to RSVP to go see this and see if I've missed my opportunity. Because she doesn't pick shows that are not good. And she's an amazing director. And mark my words, we are going to see her accepting a Tony Award in the next 5 years.
I will write it down.
Absolutely. Go on to Cats.
If I have to. Rounding out this week's calendar is the triumphant return of the Broadway behemoth Now and Forever, Cats. As it was originally, the show is directed by Sir Trevor Nunn, but this time, as we've talked about before, it will be choreographed by Hamilton Tony winner Andy Blankenbuehler, based on Gillian Lynn's original work. Apparently, this revival will not have any rapping, as it did in London in its last revival, but it will feature a number of young, up-and-coming fan-favorite performers like Tyler Haynes as Rum Tum Tugger, Eloise Kropp as Jenny Anydots, So You Think You Can Dance champion Ricky Ubeda as Mistopheles, and of course, not Nicole Scherzinger, but pop star Leona Lewis as Grisabella. James, we've talked about this show a lot and some of the weird conspiracy theories that go along with it, and there's a lot of weird things to talk about with this show. But one thing that I don't think we've really discussed is the fact that performances begin on Thursday, and then the show opens on July 31st, giving the cast, crew, and creatives only really 2 weeks of previews. What do you think that's all about?
I hadn't really thought about it, but it seems like it's been ongoing forever. So Now and Forever, if you will. So 2 weeks of previews is pretty short for something that's not out of town, but I feel like they've been in rehearsal forever. But I'm glad that they cut the rapping, because rapping will never work in a Broadway show.
No, never. Not at all.
No. Holler if you hear me.
Wow. I have thoughts on that show. I didn't see it, but I have thoughts on that. Maybe we'll get into those at another time. So, all right. Anyway.
West End updates.
Yeah, we've got a couple stories. The first, James, we've previously discussed the fact that Olivier winner Sheridan Smith was forced to take an extended break from the West End transfer of Funny Girl this past spring due to stress and exhaustion that apparently was tied to family troubles. Well, Smith made her triumphant return to the show on Friday. Her alternate, Natasha J. Barnes, had been filling in for her since the end of May, as she will twice a week through July 18th, and then once a week from then on through the show's limited engagement, which is scheduled to end on October 8th. I'm very glad that Sheridan Smith is back, but I believe, James, we had a listener let us know that when she was in London, she saw Barnes in the role and thought she was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, understudies don't ever get enough press about how wonderful they are. I mean, certainly there's got to be a reason that they are understudying, because they do have the goods. You know, producers at that level do not take a chance of putting somebody incompetent in as the understudy, say, like, you know, me as the Jesus understudy for Jesus Christ Superstar, you know. So, but it's great to hear. I love understudy stories. That's great.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Another show that we've previously talked about that is having a life in London is the Mark Rylance and Lewis Jenkins comedy Nice Fish. Rylance, the 3-time Tony and 1-time Oscar winner, co-wrote the play with his Minnesota poet friend Jenkins and sold out 2 runs, one at ART in Cambridge, Mass., and one at St. Anne's Warehouse in New York. The production had previously announced a London transfer, but on Friday, it became official that the show would end up at the West End's Harold Pinter Theatre from November 15th through January 21st. Tickets went on sale to the general public yesterday, but here's the interesting thing about this. If you didn't get the chance to book your tickets yet, and let's say a performance you wanted to attend was sold out, don't fret, because if you show up to the Pinter box office on the day of the show dressed as either a fish or a fisherman, you will receive a complimentary ticket in a private box. James, as goofy as this is, when you consider the Jenkins poems that Rylance used as Tony's acceptance speeches in the past, this kind of makes perfect sense.
What if John Cleese shows up as a fish called Wanda?
James, I mean, I get the reference, but that was so random. I mean, okay.
Dressing up as a fish.
That's pretty random, too. But it seems so perfect for these two to do that, something like that, for this show.
Exactly. What's coming up in recommendations?
All right, James, I'm sure that while I was helping my brother's family move in the sweltering Florida heat yesterday morning, since you are a Northeast liberal elite, you were kicking back and reading the New York Times while your live-in cook was making you eggs Benedict. But for our listeners who do not sit around in a smoking jacket reading the newspaper, there are a few stories that we wanted to recommend. The first is an in-depth Q&A with Javier Munoz, who we mentioned recently from Hamilton. And it's a pretty interesting read. He talks about the health challenges that he's had over the years, being HIV positive and battling cancer last fall. It's a really cool read to kind of get you into the Hamilton era, so to speak. I think I'm pronouncing that right. The other is another New York Times feature. It's a cool conversation with Audra McDonald and Zachary Quinto. They talk about the childhood difficulties that led them to acting, their commitment to helping troubled youth, as well as being role models to younger women of color and to gay men. Another really good Q&A that from the New York Times. So check those out. And then after you finished perusing the Times, James, I'm sure that you had your butler pick up the Washington Post so that you could read the feature on the musical theater writing team of Zena Goldrich and Marcy Heisler. They've been seemingly around for forever, going back all the way to like the late 90s with Taylor the Latte Boy. And they're still trying to get, you know, one of their shows on Broadway. They're reworking their show Ever After. They had an out of town tryout at Paper Mill last year, I think. And they're still hoping to get that one to Broadway. So we'll have links to all three of those in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. So check those out. James, did your butler get a chance to read those to you yesterday morning at all?
Well, they give me a synopsis. You know, it's my personal summarizer.
You have a personal summarizer. That's perfect.
Yes.
I love
exactly.
it. I love it.
All right, Mr. Tamanini. The butler says to get us out of here.
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWW Matt. And subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for starting your week with us on a Monday, and we will talk to you tomorrow on Tuesday.
Taylor, the latte boy, bring me Java, bring me joy. Oh, Taylor, the latte boy, I love him, I love him, I love him. I used to be the kind of girl who'd run when love rushed toward her. But finally a voice whispered, love can be yours if you step up to the counter and order. Taylor, the latte boy, bring me Java, bring me joy. Oh, Taylor, the latte boy, I love him, I love him, I love him. So many years my heart has waited, who'd have thought that love could be so